This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
An exciting weekend for the Mariners. A little bit of a sad day for the Seahawks, and anybody who likes the guy who was, in my mind, as much the embodiment of this Seahawks rise and a little bit of the challenges that they had with the success once they achieved it. And we got a heck of a week here, a holiday week on Danny, Dave, and Moore. Where do we start? Do we start with the Mariners and their sweep, or do we start with Cam Chancellor? And it's not surprising that he's not going to be playing, but still, I felt it was kind of sudden and really, really sad to find out that he wouldn't be back.
All right, so when somebody comes to you and says, you want the good news or the bad news? You want the bad news first, don't you?
Yes, because the good news will always be, you want to leave on a high note.
Leave on a high note. So, yeah, the bad news, Cam Chancellor. I think everybody, is there too much shock over this? There's not, I don't think. I mean, I thought everybody, here's the thing you're looking at. The factors are, I mean, if this was 25, 30 years ago, the guy might have played on. We had less medical information then, but also guys weren't making as much money. And Cam can easily retire and, you know, not have to take that risk, because that's what you do in your work, right? It's risk reward, and, you know, you'll take risk if there's going to be a big reward. There's just too much risk on this side for him. So, and I think everybody's happy about it. I went on with Bob Gross and Tom, and Bob was the first one to say, I'm glad, because you don't want to see him, because he's such a nice guy. He really is. I saw him on the trip. I think when we went to Dallas last year, and I was with the team on the team plane, and he came along, and he just always has a warm smile for you, and he's very humble. I get the feeling he's kind of a little bit on the shy side. Mm-hmm. Man, on the field, he's such a hammer. It's just, and it caused me to think, you know, now that, like, we all knew this was going to happen, but it caused me to think, who's like Cam Chancellor? Somebody mentioned Steve Atwater. I think it was Tom Wassel from Bob Gross and Tom. Steve Atwater, I mean, he came up and hit Christian Akoya that time. But, you know, Ronnie Lott, you know, I was thinking Troy Polamalu. I mean, he plays with a lot of energy and ferocity and everything, but not like Cam. Not a guy who can jump over the line for a field goal, you know, that athletic, pick off a pass and run 90 yards in the playoffs against Cam Newton. And that, I felt like that was one of the fastest I've ever seen anybody run on a football field. And then a guy just entirely fold an offensive tackle in half up on the line of scrimmage. Who can do that besides, or who has in the history of the NFL? That's the part that all of a sudden you start to sort of take inventory, Jim, and go, man, this guy's irreplaceable.
Okay, I got a couple questions for you. One, going back to your playing days, if you were faced with the same decision that Cam had, the medical reports with the risking paralysis, do you think that even back in that day that you might have taken that gamble?
It's a great question. I would have to know, you know, like what's the percentage? Because some people would say, well, even if it's 1 in 100, you shouldn't play. So, you know, and a guy that I probably should have called today, Paul Moyer, who went through that same thing. He was also a safety. And, you know, he was a guy that went into coaching after that. So I think for most people, if you've played a number of years, and I think Paul played for seven, eight years, it's like, okay, I've had enough. I'd like to go raise a family now and be able to, you know, play in the backyard with my kids and not risk anything like that. So, and I think especially for Cam Chancellor, you know, the guy probably doesn't have to work the rest of his life. And, yeah, it's just too – and the way he plays, too. He's just too physical of a player.
Well, the other part of it I wanted to get to, Dave, before Danny, I was just thinking about Cam Chancellor. If he were to be starting his career right now and he had the same type career that he's had already, would he be as effective and as impactful as he was given the way the NFL treats big hits? It just occurred to me that maybe Cam Chancellor's, and I miss that. I miss watching football back in the 70s and 80s when you didn't really care about all the different big hits. That didn't really matter.
You want to get that?
Oh, yeah, it's my mom. My mom's calling.
Maxine.
It's Maxine.
Go ahead and answer that. Go ahead and answer that. We'll keep carrying on here for just a second. She wants to hear from Jimmy.
Oh, wait, I hit the red button instead of the
green. Oh,
dope.
Jim!
Well, go ahead, Maxine, you can call back.
Voicemail.
Maybe she's upset with Dave about something. Oh, maybe she's right outside with a baseball bat.
Yeah, that's
it's
right.
Possible
could be.
Why
just me?
Why in the world
Danny?
Would my mom call at 3:05 when she knows I'm on the air?
My kids do it all the time, and I send them the same text. I'm not sure if you're aware, but for the last 6 years, I've had a radio broadcast.
So, Danny and David, they can go to hell.
We love Maxine. Here's the thing. Didn't Cam make that pivot, that adjustment? Didn't he show that you could be a physically dominating, intimidating player, even with the emphasis? Because remember 2011, he kept getting fined. And there were three or four fines that he got in it. Eventually, it was six figures. He was getting fined more than $100,000 because he had a series of hits. And after that, he kind of changed the way he hit guys. And maybe his biggest hit, I mean, certainly, I think it's the signature moment just for the importance of the hit, the importance of the game that it came in. This is December 2012 against the San Francisco 49ers.
Throw down the right side. Man, is there wide open. Slipping down was Sherman. Flags all over the place on Cam Chancellor, who absolutely unloaded on the receiver who caught the ball at the two. I think that was Vernon Davis. It looked like a clean shot. And Vernon Davis isn't sure where he is. It is a first down. Going to be a penalty, but Vernon Davis is going to remember that.
You know, a couple years after that, I believe it was 2 years, I kind of lost track. He had a hit on Vernon Davis on a crossing pattern, and he entirely kept his head out of it. So to answer your question, Jim, I think he is probably the best example of a guy who improved his game. Now, the hit, like he made a hit on Vernon Davis. There was another one on Jason Witten. It's not the soundest hit. Like he's almost like throwing the back of his shoulder into guys and not wrapping up or anything. But, of course, Cam had what we used to call the exploding shoulder pads. He's a guy that when he went into a pile, it wasn't like he came in like Earl Thomas. He kind of got into the pile like everybody else, but all of a sudden, boom, you know, he would just explode, and you'd see the ball carrier react and go, how did he do that? Same thing like with Eric Winston when he folded around and tried to block Cam, and it's not like Cam got a run at it or anything. He was standing stationary, but he had a way of a really good hip pop that he would hit people with, and they would go down. So he could get away with that. But I thought he did a good job of adjusting his game. The 2011 year, was that the year where he got the peel back block on an interception against the tight end Todd Heap from
Correct.
Arizona? I almost got kicked out of the press box because of that, because I thought that was such a – and you're supposed to be quiet up there. And I slammed the table and, you know, screamed out something about, you know, that's not a penalty. And then the Arizona sidelines, they all got mad at him. I'm like, tell your stupid tight end to get his head on a swivel. Everybody knows that. And their head coach at the time, name eludes me.
Ken Wisenhunt.
Wisenhunt was a former tight end. Go tell your stupid tight end, get your head on a swivel. And, you know, Cam just, he crushed him. It was a great block. But, yeah, that was the year when I thought his fines were going to outstrip his salary.
Now, Dave, though, you do have to protect players. Like when Sean Lee's running across the field, like he's, Golden Tate owed it to him to not try to knock his block off, Dave.
You hit everybody as hard as you possibly can on every play. Right? And the other thing is going into that, there was a hit like that where the Pittsburgh receiver hit, was it the linebacker this Monday night game that had.
Oh, Schuster.
Yeah.
Schuster Smith.
He stood over Vontaze Burfict like a big meanie.
I know, but going running into that, he had no idea if he was going to be able to actually, if he was going to take the brunt of that or not. So you go as hard as you can. So, yeah, I just thought that was ridiculous. And I remember feeling really bad for Cam because I remember thinking, I hope that doesn't influence the way he plays going forward, because as we'll hear later, I mean, he had, and Danny, you voted for Cam Chancellor in the Super Bowl. You talk about setting the tone. I mean, the hit on Demaryius Thomas, that set the tone for that entire game.
Snap out of the shotgun, stands, looks, has time, dumps it underneath, and getting hit, and I mean hit hard as he caught the ball, Demaryius Thomas, by Cam Chancellor. Near the 40-yard line, and we have seen Cam blow up receivers like that all season.
That was early in the Super Bowl. It did set the tone, and in fact, Demaryius Thomas later on, he explained just what that felt like.
Cam Chancellor broke my rib.
What did he do?
What? You ain't see this?
No, I mean, I want you to tell the story.
Golly.
So what happens?
My first attempt to catch a ball, well, my first catch, I got de-cleated. I got hit probably from here, about 3 yards. The opposite way. And I got up quick because I wanted to play like it didn't hurt, but it was hurting bad.
Did he say anything to you?
He didn't say nothing, but you know how he get over you and make, you know, the whole defense come over to intimidate you. And I just thought after that hit, our offense just went flat. Just went flat. And I just kept playing because I was like, man, I might never get this chance again. So I'm going to go out. And I just kept getting hit hard. That's the hardest I ever got hit in my whole career. That whole game, oh, man, I felt the worst.
Wait, did you think that the game was over at that point?
I didn't think it was over, but I was like, man, they coming to hit today.
That's another level.
I'm telling you, man, he hit me so hard. So hard. That's the hardest I got hit my whole career.
Do you ever say that about another guy in football, Dave? Talk about how hard he hit you?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. My first, like, welcome to the NFL moment was Jesse Sapolo. He was a center, and they ran this little screen to Roger Craig, and I was running out there thinking, I'm going to tackle Roger Craig for a loss, and all of a sudden, poof, yeah, just blindsided. And those don't actually hurt that much. It's, you know, you would think that they would, but they don't when it's really clean like that. But, yeah, it was bad. I was like, yeah, you got me.
We're going to get more of the memories of Cam Chancellor. It's the time. There'll be a lot of room for us to talk about the salary cap significance, how this relates to any discussions or negotiations or thoughts about Earl Thomas, and also just our memories of what he meant to this team. We'll do that, get back into the subject at 3:30 on Danny, Dave, and More. The next subject we have, though, is the Mariners, who over the weekend, three games against the Royals, they allow a total of 5 runs, and in my mind, had a fantastic stunt on Saturday night with the turn ahead the clock uniforms. I can't remember the last time I enjoyed watching a game as much as I enjoyed watching that game. Both the way the game went and just watching how much fun I thought the players were having with those uniforms.
Did it really have that big of an effect on you? I guess I didn't really think it was. The only thing was Ben Gamel's tattoos. That was a surprise.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. No, he looked great out there. Nelson Cruz, yeah. we got to see him too. And D. Gordon flipping the hat around. Felix wanted to wear his hat backwards, but the umpire wouldn't let him. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. And people who criticized it, I was like, well, it was just one game. What's the big deal? And you're trying to get kids interested, aren't you? My boys were into it. I like the colors. Curtis Rogers, he's wearing one of the hats today. So.
Oh, yeah.
Curtis, you speak for the youth. Was it fun?
Oh, it was a blast. I was there on Saturday night, and I just kind of had this thought in the back of my mind, like, what's going to happen next? Because you had no idea what was going to happen.
We had the out-of-town scoreboard included games between Neptune and Pluto.
Jeremy Hernandez pitched a complete game for Team Mercury.
Jeremy Hernandez, that's great.
Mercury that was there. All of the different things. I thought it was fun. I did think Ben Gamel won it. Like, Ben Gamel, I know it was turn ahead the clock. He looked like 1987 Klamath Falls gas station attendant. Like, I was waiting for him to pull the red handkerchief out of his pocket to wipe off the gas can as he put the lid back on. I thought it was awesome. And his triple that he had when the guy dove for it and watching him motor around, I thought it was great.
Are these rumors true that at Edgar's Cantina this Friday that you might do a Ben Gamel impersonation?
I'm investigating the possibility, yes. I want to make sure that everybody would be would take it in the spirit in which it is intended. But, yeah, I did.
An imitation. What do we got?
I was going to dress up like him.
Tattoos, beard.
Maybe. Did he get the cigarettes in the T-shirt?
No, he didn't have any cigarettes. There was nothing like that, but it did have – he was all out of sleeves. He had the sleeveless shirt, and then he had an undershirt on, which he also torn the sleeves off of. And in fact, that was one of the things. I thought that he came here to do two things, rip the sleeves off my shirt and triumph royally, and I'm all out of sleeves. That was there.
But that was a weird game, wasn't it? Because I thought, okay, well, here's Felix going through his first inning thing again, giving up 4 hits, the first 4 batters, a 3-run homer to Moustakas.
How about turn back the clock for Felix instead of this turn ahead the
clock? Yeah, that was the wrong guy to have on the mound because who knows where Felix is going to be in 2028. But you look at it and you thought, I thought, well, they're down 3-0. Boy, King Felix, this is going to be a tough night. And then they erased the lead in no time and went on to a 6-4 win. There's nothing stopping him right now.
Largely because of Ben Gamel. My gosh, he's on fire. I mean, here's a guy who started off in April. He's 121 at the end of April. And now, depending on where you want to go back to, but he's batting 300 right now for the season, despite that start. And that was, 12 games in April that, you know, he had to climb out of a big hole there. But
yeah, he didn't have a spring training. And so it was like April was his spring training.
The tattoo, I thought that was a lady.
I believe it was a lion.
It was a lion. Stacey Rost from 710sports.com said that it was, did I say that right? Rost? Mm-hmm. Yeah, she said it was a lion with really good bone structure.
Is that what it was?
It looked like, I thought it was like, I was hoping it wasn't one of his former girlfriends on there. That would be a mistake.
Yeah, that would be putting a level of permanence on that.
Yeah, that would be Scott Spezio-like.
That was exactly the conversation that spurred me to remember a column that you once wrote at
the go-to
Seattle
guy.
PI.
What
about
a piece of work that guy was.
Yeah, he was, and he went on to some infamy after his career was over. But Jim wrote a column, the Seattle PI, about stop ripping on Scott Spezio and start toasting him because he had the guts to put a tattoo of a lady who was scantily
clad. Wasn't she? What was she?
I don't know.
But
well, she was stripping in the tattoo.
So I was praising him?
Yes.
In the column, I praised him?
Yes. You said stop roasting him, start toasting him.
Oh, okay. Well, now I would have been more politically correct.
What would you have said now?
I probably would have said, boy, Scott Spezio, I can't believe that he did this, putting a stripper on his forearm like that.
Well, here was the thing, is I believe you got an email from someone who was related to Scott Spezio's ex-wife saying that maybe if you had known the story, you wouldn't be think it's so funny how he's got a picture of his girlfriend on his arm now.
I think you've accurately portrayed that, Danny, as I recall. But no, and Spezio didn't really come through for the Mariners either. He wasn't exactly what they were expecting from him. But Ben Gamel has certainly come through. You like the way I got away from that? Because I know you're probably going to be looking for the Spezio story.
I got it right here.
And quoting something stupid
already.
That I wrote.
Oh. Everyone's taking shots at the Mariners' Scott Spezio, even the franchise. That's what Jim called Art Teal. As if he's never had a bad year. Yes, around here in our office, the H for he, when it's the franchise, is capitalized. Taking some shots at Teal there. It's time for someone to stick up for Spezio. I don't care if he's the worst batter in Major League Baseball. Don't care if he's not averaging $1 million per hit. Don't care if reasonably good-looking man wants to wreck his appearance with a vertical caterpillar on his chin. Because he had the little soul patch that was there. Spezio has more guts than all of us divorcees combined, and for that he should be lauded and applauded.
Oh my God, I wrote that?
Stop roasting him and start toasting him for putting a tattoo of his girlfriend on his left biceps. And here's where the picture appears. And she's got a tight T-shirt on. And she appears to be pulling down her undergarments. Is what the tattoo
Mariners
looks like.
Ben Gamel. Tasteful tattoos, right?
How about Danny taking us on an inappropriate path here?
A lion with good bone structure.
Yeah, let's go back to Ben Gamel here before I...
Or on Friday night, the Mike Zunino's home run that he absolutely obliterated.
Yeah, that was fun, but... Okay, we always talk about Mike Zunino and his power and his strength, and boy, will he be the first guy to hit it out of Safeco Field. But have you seen his average lately? Are we not supposed to say anything about that?
Wait, he hit a ball that was two rows from going out entire stadium.
I know, and I love the guy. I do. I love him. But we always overlook the fact that he's hitting 188.
He hit a ball that almost went out of the stadium.
I know.
That was
but
awesome.
How was the rest of his weekend?
Well, remember the part where he hit the ball that almost went out of the stadium? And they went
undefeated. I love him. I do. I love Mike Zunino.
He frames pitches, Jim. He frames pitches.
They're winning in spite of him hitting 188.
Here's the other thing, though. If we're going to talk about Mel Stottlemyre, and I heard Brock and Salk talk to him this morning, and we're going to spend all this time talking about how incredible the pitching staff is, Jessamine brought this up. Zunino calls a game. Like, maybe Zunino deserves a little bit of credit for whether it's Felix Hernandez.
Well, we always give him credit, don't we? I don't think this is something where we're lacking in that area, because we always say, boy, Zunino, the way he handles the pitchers, I think he gets credit for that already.
The single biggest surprise for this entire season, though, is their starting staff, right? I mean, I think we can all agree.
I thought the rotation was going to be mediocre at best.
And it's been good to maybe really good.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite great, but it's been really good. When you've got Marco Gonzalez pitching a complete game on Friday, Paxton, went through eight yesterday and then turned it over to Edwin Diaz and they win a 1-0 game. Maybe there's something to be said for the role that Zunino is playing, and maybe doesn't make up for it. Maybe you could add 12 points to his average just in your mind when you think about it. So he's at 200. And then
so you're saying if Chris Herrmann was back there or Marjama, that we wouldn't be getting the same results, that the team might not be 54-31?
Yeah.
Okay.
That is what I'm saying. Plus, none of those guys can almost hit a ball out of Safeco Field.
I think we said we'd be okay, and I like the bonus 12 points in his average there. But we said, 25, 30 home runs? we'll be okay with around 200 batting average.
Yeah, it's Danny.
When we talk about him, should we just say he's hitting 40 points better than Chris Davis?
That would be good. Be good. Crash Davis, he's 40 points on him. It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. It's time for us to take two.
Take two for the second time this season and the third time in his career. Edwin Diaz named AL reliever of the month for June.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? He looks unhittable. I don't know what those guys are doing in the batter's box, but striking out the side yesterday. Todd Mellis filling in for Divish, Seattle Times yesterday, noting that Kansas City's a team that doesn't strike out much. And, boy, yesterday, Paxton with 11. Diaz with striking out the side and 32 saves on his way to, he's on a pace for 60. And he certainly has a good shot at getting 50, and we'll be able to see Scott Servais sitting in the barbershop getting arrows on the side of his head.
Yeah, he's one of the funner athletes to watch. Like, we talked about Cam Chancellor and just all the amazing things that he does, but watching him turn his body into a whip is really interesting. Watching him, just his delivery, everything, the way he springs off the mound.
Yeah, it's reminiscent of you throwing the shot back in high school.
Yeah, did I bring that up as a comparison?
I listened to you, Dave.
Oh, man, I can't believe it. Yeah. I really didn't compare myself to Edwin Diaz.
Edwin Diaz of shot putters, Danny.
When did this happen?
I don't know.
When did you hear
this? Well, I remember thinking, man, that's pretty rich that Dave is comparing high school shot putting with what Edwin Diaz is doing at a major league level.
Well, I was talking about the concept of turning your body into a whip. Like, it starts at the ground and then it goes to the hips. It's kind of like Cam Chancellor.
Reminds me of me when I was back in
Reno. I did not say that. No, but it is. It's fascinating to watch that and how, because I wonder if he, whenever we get the pitchers out there, don't you look at their arms?
Mm-hmm.
You go, wow, that's kind of like a spaghetti arm there.
It's one of the things that is amazing about just the physics of it. It's not muscle mass. And it's right. Not sort of any...
And look at Mike Leake.
Yeah.
Oh, he was tiny, wasn't he?
Yeah. Very, very small.
He's got that whippy arm.
Tell you what, though, the guy's hit 6 home runs. He said he swings hard.
Yeah, he does. That is his goal. It is Danny, Dave, and Moore. We're going to get to your memories of Cam Chancellor, what you thought he meant to the franchise. We'll do that next.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
I thought Cam Chancellor, as much as anybody, embodied both the reasons why this team succeeded and then some of the challenges it had with that success. And maybe it's kind of fitting in some ways that he's walking away and his... Internet, the tweet announcement that he had yesterday, it didn't say retired, but I think that's mostly contractual semantics. He's going to remain on the roster. He's still going to be collecting a salary, but we're not going to see him play again. Maybe it's fitting that it happens right now when you're kind of turning the page on this defense and it is going to be a new generation. I thought the way he played, the physical sort of, like, for all the talk about how brash this team was, he was the guy that kind of played with that, hey, I'm bent Demaryius Thomas in half. I broke his rib in the first catch he had in the Super Bowl and set the tone for that game. And then later on a little bit with sort of struggling to divide up the spoils of success and that sort of question of when do I get mine? And the holdout that he had, and ultimately he did end up coming back and recommitting to the team and getting over that in a way that I hadn't seen many people. I found Cam Chancellor, as I thought about the 8 years that he played here, I thought that he embodied both the reason and the challenge that Seattle experienced with its success.
How about you mentioned him coming back in with his tail between his legs after the holdout? That's hard to do for a player. And when he came back, he was all in, and then the next year he was out at the OTAs and everything. So he showed a tremendous amount of leadership. And then did he sort of apologize or sort of say it was maybe not the best idea? Something, there was that feeling that you got from him, whether he said it or not.
Yeah, that he had, I don't think he ever apologized, but he kind of made his peace with it.
Yeah.
And I guess what impressed me about that isn't that sort of, hey, he realized the error that he made, because, look, contractual disputes happen, and guys make stands or decide that they want short careers, and I don't begrudge anybody for asking or even sitting out because they want more. What I was surprised at is that he didn't give in to sort of the feelings of pride that came in of he decided to stay here after that. I'm convinced of that. That he decided after the 2015 season, he missed the first two games there. He came and reported that next offseason. He decided that, hey, I want to stay here. I want to be a Seahawk. And even if that means playing on a contract that I didn't feel great about and don't feel great about, I want to be here. And I think that's an incredible. I was really impressed because I can't think of another player who's had a similar type holdout who's gotten over it.
Yeah, there was that moment. There was all the moments on the field. Also, his leadership came through after the Atlanta playoff game that they lost a couple years ago. And he was talking about how we're fighting too much and we're not focusing. And just the way he delivered that message, that was an interview in a post-game show on Q13. And I was so impressed by that, just the maturity. And then he's just a sweetheart, nice guy. And I think that's, you know, I wrote yesterday on 710 Sports because Brent Stecker had us, you know, all react. I feel like he's like the perfect modern warrior. Like he's a sweetheart, humble guy off the field and just an animal on the field. And so, yeah, there's so many things about him that I'm going to miss. And again, I didn't really take stock of all those things until it became official. Kind of knew it was coming. There was a picture of him on Instagram recently. We mentioned it a week or two ago. He looked like really trim, like maybe 205 trim instead of like 230. And he's in great shape and good for him. But I was like, oh, man, he doesn't look like he's getting ready for the football season.
So I guess the Legion of Boom is officially over now, isn't it? When you take the boom out of the Legion of Boom. So, and you've got Earl Thomas left and that's it. So, yeah, the one thing about him, a couple things. I was wondering how, so he's guaranteed to make $6.8 million this season, 5.2 next year. Do the Seahawks, could they require him to be some sort of an assistant type coach, or do they just have to owe him that money and just hope that he maybe shows up, or does it matter? How does that work? Do you know, Danny?
I'm not sure of the mechanics. I know that it's guaranteed. They can't release him because he's injured. Like that, if he doesn't retire, and that's why I think you've not seen him use the word retire. He's just not cleared to play. So he'll be on the physically unable to perform list.
Wouldn't you like to see him on the sideline?
Yeah, I would. I would love to see him imparting some of his wisdom on these younger players. He's really smart, too. Him and Earl, the way they play. I remember did a football 101 thing a couple of years ago on how he baited the quarterback to make a throw. And Earl does that kind of stuff, too, where, you know, he'll disguise coverages. And I think that's one of the reasons why, like, he got that hit on Davis, not the big one on the goal line, but the one where he threw his shoulder in there, because he made it look like he was running out of a zone, and then he sat down in the zone, and Kaepernick hit the crossing guy, and he was able to get a huge. So anyway, point is that he's got just so much knowledge and wisdom. But you know, if you're him, going from, I think that players nowadays, there's going to be less and less of them coaching, just because there's so much time put into coaching. And really, in football, yeah, you got to put, there's lots of pressure and everything, but, you know, you get time off, you get to go home at night. I mean, those coaches are down there burning the midnight oil. And so, yeah, I don't know if they're going to be able to get him to do that. Maybe be like a consultant, bring him in every once in a while, but I don't know if players today, with the amount of money they have, are going to be full-fledged coaches.
Do you have a favorite hit of his?
Yeah, you know, I think it was the two on the offensive linemen, Eric Winston and Mike Iupati, because on both those plays, he made the tackle. So it's one thing, like, look, usually you're the guy that goes up and blows up the block. And it's kind of like you give up a one-for-one battle so somebody else can make a tackle. To be able to deliver that blow and then still be able to go and make a tackle is impressive. And I just think him doing that, giving up 100 pounds and not really getting that much of a run at it, those were the most impressive to me.
Is it pretty much a gimme that he's going to be in the Ring of Honor?
Got to be, yes.
Hall of Fame, it's borderline, or we can ask Clayton at 4 o'clock, but I would think that if you're somewhere other than Seattle, you appreciate what Cam Chancellor did, but the longevity part of it's probably going to work against him.
How many touchdowns did he score in his career, do you guys know?
I can think of two. He had the one against
Cam Newton.
He picked off Cam in the playoff game.
I thought there was only one.
Is that the only one that he scored?
Maybe I think that's the only one
that he went.
Yeah, well, and
I have one in my head.
I was the same way, Danny. I thought there's had to be three or four in there.
Yeah, I was thinking the game against Denver, but he didn't run it back for a touchdown. The regular season game against Denver, the week 3.
Yeah, they went into overtime.
Mm-hmm.
I was down on the field for that. It looked like he jumped 10 feet in the air. He's so impressive.
My favorite hit of his came in 2011, a game that everyone should forget about. Charlie Whitehurst started it in Cleveland. The final score was 6-3, but he had a play. It was in the second half. A running back named Montario Hardesty came running up through the middle, and it was a one-on-one matchup, and Cam did not get much of a running start. In fact, he kind of just took a step into him. And, Dave, you mentioned the term exploding shoulder pads, and after hearing you explain what that was, he basically picked Hardesty up at about the waist and then planted him right there on his back. Jessamyn McIntyre, our producer, put together a montage, a sum of Cam Chancellor's greatest hits. You're going to hear some familiar voices talking about what he meant to the Seahawks.
Let's turn it like we do, man. Let's take this on the road and do what we do, baby. L.O.B. 1, 2, 3.
Hit me.
Ready for step?
Pop down.
We stand.
Turn up.
Stafford takes the snap, looks left, fires inside, ball's caught by Johnson. He gets in the end zone, he fumbles in the end zone. The ball comes out of the back of the end zone. The official says it's a touchback.
We feed off Cam. You know, he go out there making big hits. You see how he hit Tolbert. Tolbert, what, 5'10", 260? And Cam dropped him like he was 185.
Newton steps up. His arm is hit as he throws. It's intercepted. It's Cam Chancellor who picks it up. He gets up off the ground. He fights his way inside the 35.
Cam mean everything to the defense. He's the heart and soul with those hits. Man, that makes our defense ride out, and that's something we need to do.
Pass down the far side. Reaching up. Ball's tipped up. Do the Seahawks come down with it inbounds? Do they come down? Mr. Fisher, they do! Leaping up, making the interception.
Cam Chancellor.
Way to go, Bam Bam, as he reaches up. And that is going to seal the deal.
He a beast, man. You know, I never met nobody as big and as strong as him.
It is Seattle's ball at the 40-yard line of Minnesota. The Seahawks defenders are going nuts on the near side. Great job by the Seahawks. Cam Chancellor ripping it out. Atama Rubin falling on it.
Big-time players make big-time plays in big-time games, and that's exactly what he did.
Ball is intercepted. Coming back the near side. He's going to go. It is Cam Chancellor. They are not going to touch it. 15, 10, 5. He strides in. Cam Chancellor. Touchdown, Seahawks.
He's grown tremendously in his leadership role. He's really taken ownership of it. People really respect him. You know, when he opened his mouth, you know, even me, I'm going to listen, you know, because I respect what he has to say. And I think that's the biggest thing I see out of Cam. He's really owning up to being a real leader.
Flags all over the place on Cam Chancellor, who absolutely unloaded on the receiver who caught the ball at the 2. I think that was Vernon Davis. It looked like a clean shot. But 2 flags fell. Oh, my goodness, what a shot by Cam Chancellor. And those flags came out instantly. And Vernon Davis isn't sure where he is.
Cam is the type of guy that he prepares great. He comes out with the philosophy, and he wants to knock the lights out. That's his mentality. And I think he just comes out, he plays that way.
Ball sailed, ball's intercepted at the 40-yard line. Cam Chancellor.
There's really no weakness in his game.
4-man rush. Wentz has time. Throw. Ball is picked off. Cam Chancellor at the 35. Far side of the field.
I don't know when my career stopped, but, you know, this gives me another 3-4 years. And who knows what happens after that? You know, nobody can say what happens, what's going to happen in 3 or 4 years, but it does solidify 3 or 4 more years for me.
Let's turn on like we do, man. Let's take this on the road and do what we do, baby. L.O.B. 1, 2, 3.
Hit me.
Ready for step?
Pop down.
We stand.
Turn up.
Really well done, Jess. And I'll say this, I'm going to miss watching him play football. I loved watching him play.
Yeah, he's one of the most, I think also the versatility and what he allows you to do as a coach. You know, there's nobody like him. Now, we had a couple of good, you know, somebody was talking about the intensity that Mike Singletary had. And, yeah, he did have that kind of intensity. But, man, this guy, he's playing the deep half of the field in cover 2, you know, and that's covering the deep half of a field. I mean, and then able to come up on the line of scrimmage and do what he did to offensive linemen. The range there of the versatility is like nobody else on defense in the entire NFL.
You heard Bruce Irvin there mentioning the hit on Tolbert. And I always think of Mike Tolbert, Dave, what you describe him as, the fat kid from Carolina.
Yeah, I got in some trouble for calling him that on TV.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the fat kid.
It's Danny David Moore. We're going to tell you about the Mariners weekend next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
Take a look at the American League West standings, Jim. Half game.
I saw that. I'm glad you guys didn't really look for the soundbite where I basically called you an idiot for thinking the Mariners would ever be back in first place again, because I figured once Houston took over, it'd be like, well, okay. Defending World Series champions, everyone acknowledges that up and down the roster, top to bottom, that Houston has a better team, even Jerry DePoto.
Let's set the full scene for what had happened, because I believe it was a Friday. We were out at Edgar's Cantina, like we are each Friday home game, and the Mariners had just, quote-unquote, fallen into second place. Like, they had, by virtue of a loss in Houston, had moved ahead. You said, being the cynical type that you are, you put on a different hat to be the cynical and said, do you think they'll ever be in first place again this year? And you said, no, they won't be. And a week ago...
I'm still right.
Are you sure?
Well, yes, I am sure at this point. They're a half game behind.
Are the Mariners going to be in first place again at any point this season?
No, they won't be. No, I was looking at it. No, they're not going to quite make it.
Are you sure?
Well, no, I'm not sure. I'm not sure about anything I say. Are you kidding? No, you look at the Astros, though, and... They play Texas this week and the White Sox. It's fun, though, that part of it, just looking at who the Astros are playing. You can even do scoreboard watching now with the Yankees and the Red Sox. The Mariners' record is only two games worse than the best record in the American League, which the Yankees have at 54-27. The Mariners are 54-31, so four games behind in the loss column. But they're right there, and we sit there and we think, okay, New York, Boston, and Houston, those are the super teams in the American League. Everybody agrees with that. And here are the Mariners, and I think they're a very good team, but they're almost a super team too right now at 54-31.
But they're never going to be in first place again in the American League West.
No,
the rest of
they're
the
not
season.
Going to quite make it. No, it's not going to happen.
I don't believe in the super team theory either.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Why?
But, just because, look at Houston. I said just because. That's my reason.
All right.
Because I said so, Jim.
The super team!
Yeah, they lost a three-game stretch to Tampa. What did we go in Tampa? 2-1?
Yeah. Yeah. Did they sweep them?
Yeah, they got they won the first game of the series, of the four game series at Tampa, but yeah, they've lost three in a row. So all of a sudden it looked unattainable when Jim made his bold statement, but now all of a sudden it's like looking like it.
I do think it's great that Jim is playing along and using his kiss of death for good instead of for evil. Instead of making declarations.
Oh, the smoke and lock that they're going to make the playoffs. Well, everybody thinks they're going to make the playoffs at this point.
Well, you don't need to say that, though. You need to keep saying how they'll never be in first place in the American League West again the rest of the season, because that increases the likelihood that they will, in fact.
So do you honestly, in your heart of hearts, think that the Mariners – see, because even DePoto, when we talked to him last week, he said, and what I like, what I'm trying to grab onto and think that, gee, Jerry might be right. Sometimes the best team doesn't always win. And I think he was referring to his own team saying that. And so that, because some of the things the Mariners are doing, the tangible stuff, I mean, you can't really explain it entirely, can you? Because you look at some of the things that are happening with the Mariners and you expect it to regress a little bit, but boy, they just keep padding on to that. They're 26-11 now in one-run games. You keep thinking, well, they might lose an extra inning game at some point. No, they're 8-0. In that category. The run differential, when you look at that, Houston's plus 170 right now. The Mariners are plus 22, and they're 23 games over 500, and they're only half a game behind a team that's outscored them by 148 runs.
They're a 500 team in games that are decided by more than two runs, so three runs or more. They're essentially 500. But in games that are decided by two runs or fewer, they are 23 games over 500, 26-11, and then you throw in their record in two-run games. And I think that that is a reflection partly of their success in hitting off of opposing bullpens, but it's also a testament to their bullpen and specifically their closer that Edwin Diaz has become. Edwin Diaz should be an all-star, and so should Mitch Haniger. Like, those should be their first-time all-stars for them. And Paxton, like, those three guys, which is amazing to think about how much there's been a turn and a change, because Nelson Cruz has been good and Kyle Seager's, he hasn't hit with the average that you'd like the guys that are leading this team are fundamentally different from the guys that were leading the team last year and the year before.
Well, and then they're getting it from all these different places, like Healy going 4-for-4 the other night. You know, he's gotten in defensively. He may be the most underrated defensive player just by the flexibility that he has, and I don't remember the last time I saw him miss, you know, one of those picks. So, but yeah, all this, the A's worry you anymore? I mean, yeah. I know they're kind of pulling away from them, but that still is a team that haunts.
A's are scrappy, man.
Watching the Mariners.
A's have passed the Angels that are there. The Angels are coming in for a 3-game series. That begins tomorrow. We'll have the coverage for you here all through the holiday week. We've got the professor. We're going to ask him about all sorts of things. That includes J.R. Sweezy. Seahawks taking a look at him. Could that be a fit? We'll tell you next.